Since he knew himself to be totally lost already, any direction was probably an improvement. He edged past the dragon and hurried away, the huge beast turning with difficulty to follow him. They padded down a series of passages that crisscrossed like a maze. At one point, Two Flower thought he heard shouts a long way behind him, but they soon faded away. Sometimes the dark arch of a crumbling doorway loomed past them in the gloom. Light filtered through dimly from various shafts, and here and there bounced off big mirrors that had been mortared into the angles of the passage. Sometimes there was a brighter glow from a distant light well. What was odd, thought Two Flower, as he strolled down a wide flight of stairs and kicked up billowing clouds of silver dust motes, was that the tunnels here were much wider, and better constructed too. There were statues in niches set in the walls, and here and there faded but interesting tapestries had been hung. They mainly showed dragons by the hundred, in flight, or hanging from their perch rings, dragons with men on their backs, hunting down deer, and sometimes other men. Two Flower touched one tapestry gingerly. The fabric crumbled instantly in the hot, dry air, leaving only a dangling mesh where some threads had been plaited with fine gold wire. "I wonder why they left all this," he said.
"I don't know," said a polite voice in his head.
He turned up and looked into the scaly, hoarse face above him.
"What is your name, dragon?" said Two Flower.
"I don't know."
"I think I shall call you Nine Reeds."
"That is my name, then."
They waded through the all-encroaching dust in a series of huge, dark-pillared halls which had been carved out of the solid rock. With some cunning, too, from floor to ceiling the walls were a mass of statues, gargoyles, bas-reliefs, and fluted columns that cast weirdly moving shadows when the dragon gave an obliging illumination at Two Flower's request. They crossed the lengthy galleries and vast carven amphitheatres, all awash with deep, soft dust and completely uninhabited. No one had come to these dead caverns in centuries. Then he saw the path, leading away into yet another dark tunnel mouth. Someone had been using it regularly and recently. It was a deep, narrow trail in the grey blanket. Two Flower followed it. It led through still more lofty halls and winding corridors quite big enough for a dragon. And dragons had come this way once, it seemed. There was a room full of rotting harness, dragon-sized, and another room containing plate and chainmail big enough for elephants. They ended in a pair of green bronze doors, each so high that they disappeared into the gloom. In front of Two Flower, at chest height, was a small handle shaped like a brass dragon. When he touched it, the doors swung open instantly and with a disconcerting noiselessness. Instantly, sparks crackled in Two Flower's hair, and there was a sudden gust of hot, dry wind that didn't disturb the dust in the way that ordinary wind should, but instead whipped it up momentarily into unpleasantly half-living shapes before it settled again. In Two Flower's ears came the strange, shrill twittering of the things locked in the distant dungeon dimensions out beyond the fragile lattice of time and space. Shadows appeared where there was nothing to cause them. The air buzzed like a hive. In short, there was a vast discharge of magic going on around him. The chamber beyond the door was lit by a pale green glow. Stacked around the walls, each on its own marble shelf, were tier upon tier of coffins. In the centre of the room was a stone chair on a raised dais, and it contained a slumped figure which did not move but said in a brittle old voice,
"Come in, young man."
Two Flower stepped forward. The figure in the seat was human as far as he could make out in the murky light. But there was something about the awkward way it was sprawled in the chair that made him glad he couldn't see it any clearer.
"I'm dead, you know,"
came a voice from what Two Flower fervently hoped was a head, in conversational tones.
"I expect you can tell."
Said Two Flower.
"Yes,"
he began to back away.
"Obvious, isn't it?"
agreed the voice.
"You'd be Two Flower, wouldn't you? Or is that later?"
"Later?" said Two Flower. "Later than what?" He stopped.
"Well," said the voice, "you see, one of the advantages of being dead is that one is released, as it were, from the bonds of time, and therefore I can see everything that has happened or will happen all at the same time, except that, of course, I now know that time does not, for all practical purposes, exist."